the maternal fetal medicine doing the screening ultrasounds. I mean, this is unfair because some of them do really good work and they're honest, but many of them, obviously, everything they do, they bill for. So the more they find, the more they get paid. But even a broken clock is right twice a day, so they're going to be right sometimes. But the question is it worth all the fear and anxiety they're planting in you? What is that doing to us short-term and long-term?
Welcome to the Experience Miracles podcast, where we help parents find hope, answers, and drug-free help to overcome your child's chronic health challenges. I'm your host, Dr. Tony Ebel, and I'll be sharing my experiences as both a dad and a doctor on every episode. I can take the latest science and neurology of healing and break it down in the most simple and relatable way possible. We'll take on the toughest topics and answer your biggest questions through interviews with other amazing parents and leading experts, leaving you with practical action steps that you can take to help your child heal and thrive. It's time to expect and experience miracles. Let's get started. All right, everyone. Parents, you are in for an impactful conversation today, a truthful conversation, a straightforward and helpful conversation. I'll double tap on that word as we introduce our good friend and just a real impact maker and change maker in Dr. Stu here today. We love to be helpful. On earlier episodes, if you've caught it here on the Experience Miracles podcast, I have shared my background as a farm kid from Iowa, which actually the Iowa, which is close to Minnesota, has a heck of a connection with Dr. Stu here. We'll get to later on. But we love to be helpful. And the truth is, when it comes to pregnancy and it comes to labor and delivery and birth, moms today get anything but truth, anything but help and empowerment. And so Dr. Stu has spent 24 years assisting women, did spend 24 years assisting women with hospital birthing. And then, and I'm sure that was quite the day and quite the driveway, and then left that traditional medical system and spent 13 years as a home birth obstetrician working directly with midwives. I love, and I'm sure he's going to do it today when he says, you know, when I really figured it out is when I figured out that it's these midwives that really know what's up with birth. He specializes. This is the most awesome thing I can. There's a lot of awesomeness in your bio here, buddy, man, but specializes in natural breech and twin deliveries. I wanted to slow down my delivery of that bullet point because as you'll learn today, it shouldn't be this way, but most of us don't even think that that's a possibility. And goodness is it when you have someone who is just dedicated to those babies and to that family and knows and specializes in that. So that's a very rare specialty and a very important one because there's already plenty up against the nervous system and development of a child who's breech and of twins. So the last thing we need to do is add, you know, neurological dysfunction, like we'll talk about, from increased birth interventions. Since retiring from home births in 2022, Dr. Stu has awesomely turned his attention to traveling and teaching and mentoring and just really being an advocate for reteaching birth and twin birth skills, respect for the normalcy of birth, and, oh, love this, buddy, man, honoring informed consent. As a pediatric chiropractor, we 10x down on true, actual informed consent because moms don't get it in the traditional medical system. Hopefully, you have already listened to multiple episodes of his incredible podcast, Birthing Instincts, with his co-host, Bliss, who is awesome. It's truly a must listen. We are going to link it all throughout the show notes, do some awesome collaboration stuff on Instagram. And then, so this man knows what he's doing. This man knows how to empower and get moms ready, even in tougher circumstances. And I think, you know, perhaps his toughness came as a child growing up, cheering for our beloved Minnesota twins, who in 19, many of you, maybe if you're new to having babies and you're young, you don't even know that the greatest teams in the history of the Major League were in 1987, but most especially 1991 with my childhood hero, Kirby Puckett. So the first time that we ever got on Zoom like this, Dr. Stu, and chatted, and we went right into our stuff, you know, birth trauma and nervous systems and everything else. You have the same, you literally 10 feet away from me and you was the exact same Kirby Puckett poster from that year, you know, when they are champions. So I know that's a long intro, buddy. I wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything that you have been doing, but we're really gonna, you know, go deep on what you are doing, right? Which is empowerment and advocacy. So I got to learn about, you know, when you were practicing in the traditional system out in California and the moves you've made, you know, in that time. What I don't know though, and what I would love to hear is all the way back, what got you into becoming an OB and focusing on pregnancy, labor, birth, and delivery?
I didn't want to be a doctor when I was a kid. I never really thought about it. I was going to college because I think even still now, people get out of high school, they don't know what to do, so they go to college. It's just sort of just what you did in the 70s. And I was a science major, College of Biological Sciences, and I had taken all the prerequisites for medical school. And I had a Jewish mother, and so I didn't have a lot of choices about what I was going to do in the future. Was being a doctor was sort of pounded into you. And some of my friends were going pre-med, so I said, oh, I can do that. If they can do that, I can do that. So I went pre-med. I got into medical school. And in your third year of medical school, you start doing clinical rotations. And I had no vision of what I wanted to do. I sort of liked internal medicine because I like problem solving. And I think internists are, you know, that's what I realized, that they do a lot of problem solving. But I came off a rotation where I was dealing with cancer in kids. And then my next rotation was obstetrics. And instead of being up at 4 a.m. dealing with a kid who's having a seizure or having to push a chemotherapy dose on them, I was up catching a baby. And I just was floored by that. That's really what did it for me, because I realized that giving birth was happy medicine. Yeah. You got to see the results of your work and your we called them patients in those times. We call them clients now, but your patients were happy to have you. They were happy to see you. They weren't coming to you because they were sick. They were coming to you because they're well. Now, of course, there's problems, you know, there's diseases in gynecology and obstetrics as well, but you're saying for the most part, that's what enticed us. And as a third year medical student, you're naive, you're enthusiastic, you know, you don't really know anything about the world. You don't think about the consequences of your decisions. You just do them. We've probably all been through that in college. And, you know, and then in OB, we got to do not only just deliver babies, but we got to do surgery and we got to do endocrinology and we got to do a little psychiatry and we got to do a little family medicine and we got to do a little everything. And it was probably the most important thing, Tony, was longitudinal care. Longitudinal care is where you're taking care of people over time. I didn't want to be a pathologist. I didn't want to be an ER doctor. I didn't want to be a radiologist who maybe even doesn't even see the people they're taking care of. I wanted that. And there are only three specialties that really do that: family practice, internal medicine, and obstetrics. And obstetrics had all those other things. So it was fairly an easy choice for me. And you don't think about the consequences downstream, the hours that you're going to be up at night and the liability and the poor reimbursement and other things about that. Fortunately, young people are naive, because otherwise we wouldn't have people in all these other professions that if they thought about it and they got where they were wiser, they probably would never go into in the first place. Yeah. So that's sort of how I picked OB. It wasn't, I didn't have a calling when I was a young kid. I didn't see my siblings be born. You know, a lot of midwives go into it because they were exposed to that when they were younger. Wasn't my story.
I love that. I love that. That is crazy. Because truth is, you know, what I take home from that is like, okay, you just, you know, in that great spot of being naive, that age, it's just, you chase that joy, that enthusiasm of like, and truly what is more exciting? You know, I've been blessed to be there 4 times, you know, 3 daughters, 1 son. And, you know, I was the guy, you know, in the corner with ice chips, trying not to get in the way of the midwife and the doula, you know, like, is the temperature okay? Come get me when the baby is here and needs their first adjustment. Cause you know, as a pediatric chiropractor, we're taking care of that nervous system right out of the gates. We'll get to that. But that's actually how I started as an intro's chiropractic as well. I loved science, loved biology, loved anatomy, neurology, and then being a farm kid, loved helping too. Like those two worlds, it was like, well, if you love science, you love helping people, you're going into healthcare, right? So I had no clue, didn't say the word chiropractic my first 20 years. It took my dad 10 years to stop pronouncing it chiropractic, you know, like I can sing or something, even after I got into it. And so I had to do this job place readiness assignment as a senior. And I shadowed a chiropractor, and I will never forget the joy. I will never forget that he very much enjoyed his job. And what really tripped me out was his patients were excited to be there. I was like, healthcare generally is, and God bless, here's where I'm going with this, same as Dr. Sue, God bless the people that do, because in the hospital, in cancer, in NICU, in on down the list, there is amazing people stepping into that storm and trying to get people out of it, right? And unfortunately, they're doing it inside a system that rewards you for getting people further into it than out of it. We're going to get there. So I fell in love with that idea of helping people with my hands in a joyful, you know, health building in environment. And I've never called it longitudinal, but goodness, buddy, that's exactly what we do. Our practice, I have patients who are now, we've had 84 of our patients go become chiropractors, and some of them work for me, you know? And so you have this longitudinal lifetime relationship with these kids, and whole goodness, is it, I don't have the words to properly describe, you know, that's the reason I have all the forehead wrinkles, because I smile so stinking much. I know we're on a podcast. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can see
yeah,
that.
Tony, I know many midwives, and even in my own practice where, you know, I've caught a baby and that baby grew up and then I caught her baby.
Yeah.
And if you practice long enough, as some of the granny midwives did, you're catching the grandchildren of the people that you delivered. And there's something special about that that's missing, obviously, in the medical system, where it's become corporatized and it's based on a shift and people are paid a salary. And, you know, this may be a little bit off. Well, it's on topic, but it's just one of the things that struck me when you were talking about how enthusiastic you are about your work. And people that are enthusiastic about their work, people that are happy in their job, they don't treat other people poorly. And when I hear stories about women who were disrespected or, you know, told they weren't allowed to do something, or somebody was just cranky with them or stormed off because they didn't follow the advice that they were giving them, the doctor just storms out of the room. Happy people don't do that. So there's a lot of people in our profession that are unhappy. And they don't want to be. But it's not because maybe they're naturally unhappy. It's because the system just has beaten them up so badly.
Yeah.
And they don't have the time to do the things that make them happy. There's no continuity of care anymore. Their longitudinal care is really disappearing from my profession because everybody works a shift. They work in a large group or they work or they're an employee of some large HMO. And they come in, they put in their 12 hours, and then they go home. And they may get to know somebody. And that person maybe get to like them. And then suddenly at 7 o'clock in the morning or 7 p.m., it's change a shift and you get a new, whole new face, which can't be good for the practitioner. And it's really not good for the woman in labor either.
Obviously. Man, that couldn't be more on point, honestly, Doc, because I've never thought of it that way. And that is just one of those super obvious. Everybody understands that. But man, do we really think about that? I go back to even being in undergrad. So, you know, pre-chiropractic, pre-med, pre-everything is all the same, right? You're taking all these biology classes with all these folks and it's undergrad. So you form relationships. I will tell you the truth. My 4, 5, 6 buddies who were my chemistry, biology, nerd buddies in undergrad, who I was the black sheep, right? I went into chiropractic and natural health. They all went into medicine. And I love them and I pray for them. I truly always pray for them. They look 20 years older than me. They're miserable. They are wildly unhappy with their choice. They are praying that their children do not go into medicine. One of our, the two docs that so we have 4 kiddos and, you know, this one practice that we've trusted, especially with the last two, we chose our doctors, our OBs. They're a rare bird around here due to their joy, due to the fact that they love their job and they build relationships, you know? And so, and I talk to him all the time. I'll leave his name out of today's podcast, but, I talk to him once or twice a year. I'll actually kind of see him socially, you know, which is almost more fun because then you can have a real life conversation, you know? And I just, it breaks my heart when he says to me every single time, he's like, you know, I'm still having, he's not sold out. He's one of the only people that hasn't sold out to a big hospital system. And boy, has he gotten big old offers to do so, right? Because he has an incredible, he's got an incredible practice, him and his partner, because they do what you do. And he said, I'm heartbroken because when we're gone, it's gone. You know, we can't get anybody to want to come keep this going and not sell out because they don't know why we wouldn't choose the dollars instead of the relationships with our patients and the oath we committed to. But he's a happy son of a gun. You know what I mean? And I'll never forget. This is a great birth story. He's so happy, and he trusts my wife so much with our births because they had a midwife in their practice. And then, you know, she ended up having to retire. And so, and it actually, it happened during our fourth pregnancy. And so you're not looking for somebody's credentials per se. You need to go meet these docs, especially in this relationship. With prenatal care and your baby, they're taking care of both of you. And so you want that joyful enthusiasm. And yeah, you might have to go long down the list to find them or reach out to us, you know, for support in finding them. But I love that. Okay, so I see. So we know the joy is what we
before,
chase.
Before you go on, can I chime in on some of what you said? Okay. So one of the things we talk about a lot is first of all, we talked about, you know, what your kids and the doctors don't want their kids to grow up to be doctors. And one of the things that I told my kids, and again, I don't think this was a conscious effort. It was just something that I've learned. And now I do tell this, I say this quite often, is that I would, you know, everybody wants their kids to grow up to be happy. They want their kids to grow up to be good people. They want kids to grow up to enjoy their life and enjoy what they're doing. And for most of us, they want them to find a spouse, have kids, have a family, that sort of thing. So the one thing I told my kids is whatever job you guys decide to do, I want you to love doing it. I want you to have enthusiasm doing it. And if you don't, then you need to look elsewhere. But one thing I don't want you to do is ever get a job where you're licensed by the state to do it. Now, that's a really interesting statement because that means you can't be a real estate agent. You can't be a doctor. You can't be a lawyer. You can't be a hairdresser in California. You can't. But when you're licensed by the state to do something, the state has ultimate power over you. And for instance, here's just a silly example. Robert Downey Jr. got pulled over how many times for possession or for DUI? And he still makes $20 million a movie. You or I, Tony, get pulled over for a DUI, we lose our career. Because you're licensed by the state and you can't practice without that little certificate. That's one thing. And then the other thing, too, is that there's a lot of, you know, alphabet soup that goes on with doctors. And I was board certified by the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology in 1989, and I was board certified for over 20 years. And due to a dispute with them and some other things that went on, I decided very much that I wasn't going to renew my boards. I'd already left the hospital world. It didn't make any difference for me anyway. And then I'll get criticisms that say, well, he's not board certified. It's like, well, wait a minute. So I was board certified on Tuesday, and on Wednesday I'm not board certified. Does that make me a less qualified person? And I when I see doctors in articles being quoted saying things like, you know, if your doctor isn't board certified, then that ever, or if he's not a fellow of the American College of OBGYN, or he wasn't trained in a traditional Western medical school, that they can't possibly be good. And then this is one way they denigrate midwives and other things by pulling out the alphabet soup stuff, which doesn't necessarily make you a better practitioner. Yeah. So one of the clues really is, how does that person make you feel when you come to see Dr. Tony? And he adjusts you and you leave, do you feel better than when you came in? And if the answer is yes, then that's a good practitioner.
Yeah.
And that's what we tell people in when they're seeing their obstetrician, just because they're on your insurance card or whatever, that guy's been doing your pap smear for 10 years. If you go in there and you have questions and you have 6 minutes with him and you feel like his foot is out the door every time he just walks in and you walk out of the room with more questions than you had or feeling worse than you had, don't stay there. There's so many other options, even though the options are dwindling. You know, the system is really, really flawed. I read something this morning how a birth center in San Diego is closing because they can't get enough midwives to it. And I did some thinking about that. And I just want to – is it okay if I keep going?
100%, buddy. Absolutely.
Okay. I'm on a roll. So
– We call it around here, let them cook, buddy. We are definitely ready to let you cook here, all right?
Yeah. So here's the deal. So all under the concerns of safety, these things are being done. Okay, remember this. It's all for safety. Okay, labor and delivery wards are closing across the country because they can't staff them or they can't keep up with the liability or their volume is dropping because our reproductive rates are falling. So there are what are called maternity care deserts all over the place. Okay, then we also have a shortage of midwives. There aren't enough midwives being out, and there aren't enough midwives being trained because there's a lot of barriers to them getting through training. And then doctors will often discredit certified professional midwives, and they certainly discredit home birthing. Right. So then birth centers can't get enough midwives, so birth centers close. Remember, this is all done in the guise of safety.
Yep.
So think about that. So we have less hospitals, less birth centers, less midwives, because doctors are so concerned about safety. And then we say, okay, so how is any of this making it safer for women to have babies?
It's a wild this is the conundrum. Logic. It isn't. And it's such a wild conundrum that's what we wanted to make sure we had you on and we continue to go into this conversation, because you can see when you see it for what it actually is, it's crystal clear and you can't miss it. And that actually brings me back, which is really one of the foundational, you know, we use this quote and this concept in all of our work. But Dr. Bruce Lipton, right? One of the top epileptologists, just an incredible person that we all know and love. And he has this quote. It's all over posters in our practice. It's as woven into the DNA and nervous system of our practice and purpose as you could get. And it says the function of the nervous system is to, you know, perceive the environment and coordinate the behavior of all other cells. So it teaches about the nervous system. But then further on, he goes to say, he's kind of talking about the nervous system and biology and everything together. And he says, you can't be in growth and protection at the same time. Well, if you take that phrase, you can't be in growth and protection at the same time, and you take it out of neurobiology and you put it into practice, you put it into decision making, you put it into state boards and hospitals, they have literally for generations now practiced medicine from a protection, fear-based mentality in the name of safety. And that's how they've marketed it, right? And you got to give the pharmaceutical and the medical system credit for being the greatest marketers of our time, because they're taking the most dangerous product and making it sound all sunshine and unicorns, right? And they're taking the most outdated approach, because my goodness, do we know that midwives know more. My goodness, do we know that getting out of the, you know, not having your baby in the place where people go to, you know, get sick and die is an okay decision. You know, things are going to go. So I'm very much simplifying a conversation we'll get into next and go deeper. But this is all done through, you know, back of house decision making for protection of them, not for the growth and the health promotion of mom and baby, not for their empowerment, not for their health. And if you look at the consequences, they're staring us in the face, which is we are absolutely awful at maternal health, at infant mortality. And those are the big bad things, right? So maternal deaths, infant deaths, you know, from this system, which is what it is. It's a son of a gun of a system. And then even if baby and mom make it through, and you can see me kind of change my tone and get a little teeth gritty there, even if they make it through, because they were disempowered all through the pregnancy, so mom's nervous system is stress, anxiety, tension. Baby's nervous system is plugged into her nervous system by the umbilical cord. So baby's born in a sympathetic dominant state where the vagus nerve and the regulation center never literally even developed. Then they're yanked out by their head and neck, and their vagus nerve and their brainstem and their autonomic nervous system is further shifted into sympathetics. And then, oh, by the way, even if you survived the system, you've got a child who is colicky, can't latch, can't nurse, can't poop, can't sleep, can't regulate, can't develop. And so that's the perfect storm. And there is a system that starts the perfect storm. And the earlier they hook you into the system, the more likely you're to be dependent upon it forever. So when you were in there, Dr. Stu, and I know this is a long answer, but what is the straight cut to it answer of when you were in the frickin' hospital system all those years, what are the main two or three things that have happened that leave it so shifted and so protection, fear-based instead of patient-centered? And I'll leave it at that, you know, and worrying more about the patient and their results than the system and protecting it.
The programs are generally run by doctors who are called maternal fetal medicine specialists. And they're the subspecialists. They're like at the top of the hierarchy of the medicalized professional world. Okay. You know, you got MFMs, and then you've got maybe OBs, and then you've got midwives, and then you've got nurses. But there's such a huge difference between MFMs. They tend to run everything. And MFMs deal with high-risk problems. That's their specialty. And they're good at it, right? The problem is if you're a hammer, then everything's a nail. They look at every pregnancy as a potential high-risk situation. And that's one. And I have decided, this is something I've come up with in the past year or so, that high risk is not a number. We talk about, you know, sometimes high risk means something that's 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000. It doesn't matter what the number is. High risk is something that the doctors are uncomfortable with. And they call it high risk. So that's a whole nother topic we can get into with how the term high risk is scare people, but their language is used to frighten people. And every time they frighten people, by the way, Tony, they generate more revenue.
Yeah.
So there's that vicious cycle going on of, you know, we think everything looks okay at your baby's 20-week ultrasound, but we found this one little thing in the kidney and we want to see you back in 6 weeks. We don't think it's anything, but we want to see you back in 6 weeks. So what's that woman doing for 6 weeks? She's thinking there's something wrong with her baby's kidney. And she's got all that vagal, that autonomic nervous system stuff that you just described far better than I could going on. So that's one thing. Two, we were influenced a lot by tradition. Thomas Paine once said, the long habit of not thinking something wrong gives it the superficial appearance of being right. Yeah. And there's more to that quote, but that's the main part of it. And so sometimes we just did stuff because it was always done that way. And when I was a third year medical student at the University of Minnesota, I did a rotation at a hospital in St. Paul, and my obstetric rotation, that's the one I was talking about very early on with you. And we cut a medial lateral episiotomy in every single woman. Okay. This was like 1981. People need to understand the term informed consent is often misinterpreted. Informed consent is not something the doctor gives you. The doctor gives you information. You, the patient, give consent. So you're the one that's giving informed consent, not the doctor. It's always often misinterpreted that way.
It is. Yeah.
But anyway, and then there were things like, you know, we were sort of wined and dined by the pharmaceutical companies, and we thought that bottle feeding and formula were better than breast milk. Yeah. And yeah. I did these things. And so they had standing orders on the postpartum order sheet that wasn't, you could offer to the woman is a shot that would dry up her breast milk so she wouldn't get engorged so that she could bottle feed. And this was a very feminist thing. This came in at the time with the Virginia Slims commercial of you can have it all, baby. And, you know, women, we need to get back to work and they need to get back to their job. And, you know, there's no difference between breastfeeding and bottle feeding. This is what we were sold. And we were sold that every woman, when she walks into labor and delivery, needs to have this algorithm of tests done in order to have her baby. She needs to be put on a monitor. She needs to have her blood drawn. She needs to pee in a cup. She needs to, you know, do all these things. You know, at home, we don't do any of those things. And the babies come out and mothers now, and babies all live.
Let's pull on that thread right there, Doc, because that is a very sequential system to make sure we can find something to tag you with high risk. So it goes back to I want to pull on that because I love that. That's what I found when I started getting into this practice of serving kids. So my beginning, you can go all the way back, moms and dads, and you can listen to episode one about the perfect storm and just some of the backstory behind all where we found this. I found this clinical information about preconception, prenatal distress on the nervous system, all the clinical correlations, not from school, not from PubMed, not from, you know, traditional resources. I found it by doing something that Dr. Stu very much advocates for, and we're going to go into that next, is actually truly sitting down knee to knee with you and listening to your child's case history. And again, buddy, I would find everything was going smooth and we had the 20-week ultrasound and that ventricle was supposed to be 0.3 centimeters and they found it to be 0.294. And so the ultrasound tech just left it on my voicemail, scared the ever-living heck out of me. I didn't get to talk to anybody about it for 6 weeks because I had to get an appointment downtown Chicago at a high risk. And boom, there goes sympathetic dominance. I could give you 400 similar normal things that occurred that immediately sent that mom and that system. So they need those tests to find something wrong that they could then trump up big time and boom, you're in the system. You are now diagnosed as pregnant. You now have to have a medicalized labor and delivery, right? And on down we go with this vicious cycle. So actually what I want to do is I want to kind of just for a second at least or a minute or two, I want to spin this. How do we spin this in a good way? That's not the right phrase I'm looking for there. But to get moms ahead of this, this is a dance I struggle to dance, buddy. And so, you know, here on the podcast, we're talking about it. And I would also love wisdom from you being experienced with it. What I struggle with being, you know, Captain Positivity, right? We were joking about this before we even recorded is I struggle really making sure that I'm giving moms and dads an opportunity to have full informed consent, not from the goodness that I can deliver them. That's easy, right? I can talk about the nervous system and the benefit of what we do, but I probably stop short of really, really telling them the risk of trusting that system, trusting those findings, because I don't want to come across as the Dark Knight who is just looking for problems all the time. But if they don't know how this works, when they get that first hook into mom, it's going to be easier to get the second hook and the third hook and the fourth hook. So I kind of don't even know the question I'm asking, except for maybe like, how do we best prepare? So when you're going, and I know this is your mission right now, you want to advocate, you are empowering, you are teaching, not only, you know, you reach moms directly with the podcast, but you're really doing a lot for other professionals like me in our profession to get there. How do we get ahead of this storm? What are some things that we could share with moms to empower them and prepare them? It's kind of a basic word, but it might be one of my favorites. It's just proactive preparation. You know, prepare for the good, but also be prepared for the BS they're going to tell you so that you don't let it in and you don't get consumed by it.
Yeah, so that's an open-ended question. So let me just back up and start with just saying that outcomes is a good way to see if something is working or not working. And if you, just to take an example, if you go to the same hairstylist and every time you go home, you don't like the way you look, okay, you got to stop going back to that hairstylist. Maybe it's your hair, but most of the time it's, you know, that a good stylist, you're happy with it. And so you go back. And you look at the outcomes. That's a very simple example, and we could get much more complex, but I think people will understand what I'm saying. So let's look at the health outcomes in the last 100 years, and we can't really do that in short podcasts, but we can summarize things. How have we been doing? How has the medical model, which took over really the obstetrical world in the 20s, around that time, how have they been doing? How is the United States doing? And the answer to these questions are obvious. I wouldn't bring them up if they were doing great. If they were doing great, we could say that we ended the podcast. You know, go to the hospital, have your baby, and you'll be fine. But they're doing terribly. And I don't mean that they don't sometimes do miracles. Everybody has to put this caveat in when they talk about that. And just, you know, and the maternal fetal medicine doing the screening ultrasounds. I mean, this is unfair because some of them do really good work and they're honest, but many of them, obviously everything they do, they bill for. So the more they find, the more they get paid. But even a broken clock is right twice a day. So they're going to be right sometimes. But the question is it worth all the fear and anxiety they're planting in you? What is that doing to us short term and long term? How is our overall health? How have we done? You know, in 1970, I quote this all the time, the C-section rate in the United States was 5%. Yeah, maybe they were putting forceps on moms after giving them ether in the 50s and 60s and doing things. But, you know, we didn't have a C-section rate that's 500% higher now than we did before, with a rate of cerebral palsy or neonatal death, which would be the endpoints that they're always looking for.
Right.
These are the endpoints in every article about obstetrics that's looking at a new way of doing something, whether it's inducing people at 39 weeks or sectioning all breaches or anything. The endpoint is always neonatal death. They don't look at any other endpoint as if there's nothing else that matters. Now, obviously, a death is bad, but there's so many other things that matter, like baby's health, mother's mental health, mother's satisfaction, breastfeeding, bonding, all that stuff, microbiome, all that stuff. That's not never even mentioned in these kind of articles. So you end up with a rise in the intervention rate with no evidence that it's doing anything good, but with obvious evidence that it's doing things that aren't good. And we're looking at outcomes. We're looking at babies who have more problems in chronic illnesses and chronic health issues. Now, there's lots of variance in that. Some people would say it's heavy metals and it's vaccines. Some people would say it may be GMO or the food we're eating or the food the mother's eating before she gets pregnant or while she's pregnant. I mean, you look at on the shelves in the United States, go into your local gas station for a snack and see what you can find that's healthy. There's nothing. Absolutely nothing. Zero. And, you know, if you're traveling like I do a lot, you know, you stop at a gas station, look for a snack. Yeah. It's like, all right, I guess I'll just buy a bottle of water. And then, oh, I can't even buy a bottle of water. It's got plastic stuff in it. Yep. And, you know, you can't find anything. So I got off track there. But you end up with babies that aren't doing well and their microbiomes are affected. And because they're born by cesarean section, they're not necessarily a scheduled cesarean section, or they're induced and they're given artificial Pitocin rather than their mom's oxytocin. They're not, and they're given an epidural and they're disconnected from their mom. As you said, things travel through the umbilical cord throughout pregnancy and especially during labor, that mom and baby are this beautiful symphony that's playing between each other. And when you start to remove certain instruments, it doesn't sound the same. Yeah. And there's all these things going on. And it's never considered because all that matters to these women is a live baby. I mean, to the doctors is a live baby in the bassinet. And what happens to that baby in the future, what happens to that mom in the future, what happens to that mom's future babies is not their concern at that moment. And, and so people have to stop and think, and is this system the way I want my kids to be brought into the world? Is this what I want? And can we institute change in that by making demands? And yeah, you have to make the people that are running the system uncomfortable because they're never going to change it. Yep. The people that run it are very happy. They're making lots of money. They have a lot of power. The people that are in it are often either just so beaten up or they're just ignorant. They just don't know it because it's all they've ever done. And so they become useful idiots going out, like Lenin said, and promoting something they know is bad for them because they're sort of part of a mass formation of wanting to be part of the collective. Because anybody like me, and there's a lot of other doctors in the country, some wonderful doctors in the country I know, who have been run out of their hospitals simply because they've tried to do something different. These are all red flags.
So, the whole thing, every single department in that hospital and in that healthcare system is run by a spreadsheet and people who make decisions based upon financial numbers. And I know this. I know I have dear friends in the occupational therapy world, and they run it by spreadsheets. I know the ones that are, you know, determining the outcome, you know, making the decisions via spreadsheets. And then I know the ones who are just forced to do the system. And they either are like, I got to support my family, so I stay in it. And I become this frustrated technician, or you nailed it. Then a bunch of them are literally just clueless because, you know, when all you see, it's like your social media feed. If you haven't taken care of it, it's taking care of you, you know, and it's going to just show you the same and you're going to get stuck into it. But I love this so much, what you just said. It's wild. The more I jam with you here, buddy, the more I just literally see we think and operate the same. This whole realization of the perfect storm and what's really causing these problems, and I mean it, causing these problems, came through reversing the conversations from outcomes backwards. So when I got into pediatric chiropractic, I started looking at things literally just from a statistical analysis. And I was like, it's this simple, everybody. I was like, son of a gun. This is the sickest generation of kids ever by a large margin. We have seen this isn't like we just are diagnosing it better. We have what's called a hockey stick spike in epidemiological studies. Researchers know that, like, okay, it was climbing. All right, this was climbing. Okay, whatever. But then it goes, boom, like a rocket, right? Like a hockey stick there, and it bends straight up. Well, that's a significant shift in the environment that had to cause that. That's not genetics. Genetics takes thousands of years to even see, you know, marginal statistical differences. So we know that something changed. So I'm looking at it as a kind of science and math nerd, right, Stu? And I'm like, son of a gun. And this is, I don't have kids yet, right? I'm in chiropractic school studying this. Well, then, and this is, gosh, wow, this is so, this podcast episode right then. Then Addison, our first baby arrives, I witness a birth as a dad. And, you know, here's the part I'm going to struggle to communicate. There aren't words per se for that perspective shift, but I'll choose those for the words I'm trying to get to here. You have the largest, most significant, most wonderful perspective shift of your life when you watch your baby being born. And again, here's the cheat code I had: full natural birth, midwife there to support and empower, doula there to support and empower, me there to get ice chips and check baby Addison after she arrived. And so I watched this. And so now I'm on the hunt, right, Stu? And I'm on the hunt to find the answers as to, because I've got this beautiful, we had this amazing pregnancy journey, this amazing delivery, this amazing bond, this amazing healthy baby girl. And I got pissed because I was like, nobody else is going to get this. Other families, my friends, my family, if they're not going to get this, I shouldn't live. I don't know how God made me. I just know that he made me like this. Like, I get ticked when things are great for me and not for others. I get a little inner perturbed and I'm like, I got to help other people get to this. It wasn't even about, and it never is still today, 16 years later. It's not about getting rid of seizures. It's not about getting rid of autism. It's not about getting rid of asthma in a kiddo. It's about getting rid of that so they can get through to the other side, which is this optimal expression of life. So I needed to dig all the way back into where this came from. So I saw the stats: autism on the rise, asthma on the rise. Okay, yada, yada. That's yada, yada is not the right phrase there. And I see this and I go, all right, well, I'm a chiropractor. So DC stands for Doctor of Cause. I had a mentor, Dr. Cody, who said to find why that kid's sick, you're not going to find it in research. You didn't learn it in school. You need to do one thing: shut up and listen to that mom. Shut up and take the actual case history. Don't just read the paperwork because it's procedure. Go all the way back to preconception, pregnancy, labor, delivery, early childhood, and you'll find it. And you know what I was now when I switched from like traditional medical training, which we all have in undergrad, right? We're all groomed for the same system. And you get out when you become a chiropractor. Well, not all chiropractors, but those of us enlightened ones, right? We call it principled chiropractors. And so we get out and we see this and we're on the hunt. But dude, I'll shut up after this. You're going to love this though. I got duped too, dude. And here's how I actually got duped. And moms and dads, a lot of Facebook groups and a lot of Instagram influencers with great intentions and accurate information, but incomplete information, are duping us. The foods, the toxins, the environmental sprays, the Roundups, the glutens, the dairy, the preservatives, it is all part of what's causing our kids to be so sick. But it's also been around for 60, 70, 80 years. There was lead paint and asbestos and cigarettes before autism was one in freaking, you know, 14 boys born right now will have it. And some, you could say, actually, if you look at current data and project it out, 1 in 8. And so toxins didn't change as rapidly, buddy, as the prenatal system and the labor and delivery system. We are at a greater rate, more than ever before, disempowering and turning every pregnant mom into high risk. And they're trying to get as many of those reasons to label you as high risk as possible, and then get the excuse to put the Pitocin in, to put the epidural in, to put the vacuum on, to put the C-section into schedule, and grab a hold of your baby by their head and neck, yank and twist them into the world, which wreaks havoc on the vagus nerve and the autonomic nervous system, which then shuts down immediately the microbiome and the immune system. And now you put toxins, gluten, glyphosate into that suppressed sympathetic dominant system. And now toxins, which are a big part of the problem, but they're a bigger problem than ever before, because if we swim all the way upstream to preconception, pregnancy, labor, and delivery, that's the hockey stick. That's what's changed more dramatically. And so if we're going to fix this, if we're going to help this, and we're going to take those stats that we were talking about before, right, before we turn this on, the scoreboard direction, the momentum, the points, well, we can't just clean up the diet and clean up our environment. I'm really on one here, but I'm sorry. But I take 80% of case histories now, and they're gluten-free, casein-free, red dye number 40-free. They have essential oils. They've cleaned up the microbiome. They've detoxed their children. They're taking probiotics. But that child's nervous system is exhausted and disconnected because of what happened during the pregnancy and labor and delivery. And so I commend every practitioner and every parent on earth for cleaning up the environment and doing the hard work of going against the American lifestyle and societal shift. But until we clean up kids' nervous systems, and even more so, clean up moms' nervous systems early, we will still have the sickest generation of kids. So that's why this podcast stands for neurologically focused, nervous centered, focused prenatal pediatric care. Because until we unearth what triggered that stress and then what it did, and restore that for kids that went down that path and prepare moms ahead of time to not let them go down that. That's why it took me 10 minutes on that rant, buddy, because that's our freaking mission, as you know, succinct-ish.
Tony, I've never heard that expressed so well before. I've actually been sitting here absorbing what you just said. And I didn't put it as much relevant. I mean, I know that how we give birth has some relevance, but you know, I've always been sort of a person about heavy metals and vaccines and other things like that. So, but what you're talking about is even more evidence that you know how we start out is great, and that's and it, I mean, it's not great. How we start out is terrible, but it's so valuable the way you just said that I'm sort of taken. I'm stunned in a good way to hear that coming out of somebody else.
Yeah.
Because I've never really put as much emphasis on it as you just did there. And it makes perfect sense to me, knowing everything that I know. And as you said, you know, changing this and getting people to understand that maybe it all starts with us being healthy before we think about conceiving, getting our sperm health and our egg health and our body's health and our detoxifying before you get pregnant, and then eating healthy and then staying healthy. And this is one of the things about the midwifery model of care that the medical model dislikes so much, because the midwifery model of care is not in it for the money. No midwife is ever going to get rich. Midwives are in it to provide a service to the women that they care for. And that's why the model is so great. And that's why me being a solo practitioner was probably one of the best things that ever happened to me. It was also a tough thing that ever happened to me. I was always sort of waving out in the breeze there and without a lot of support. Right. But it allowed me to have fewer masters telling me how I'm supposed to practice and what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, if you listen to commercials on the radio or on TV about hospitals, the PR department that puts those out has no connection with the administration of the hospital. They're out there to sell a product. But the administration of the hospital has no connection with the people that are actually providing the care either, because their duty is to make the hospital financially viable and to make sure they justify their large administrative salaries. And so they create more and more work for administrators. Whenever there's a budget issue, you know, they never fire administrators. They always fire the janitor or the extra nurses. And that's why there's a nursing shortage. That's why these things, but there's never an administrator shortage. Wouldn't it be nice if we had an administrator shortage? And as a solo practitioner, Tony, my fiduciary duty, my ethical obligation is to the woman I'm caring for. A doctor that works in a system where they're employed by somebody bigger has a conflict of interest because their fiduciary duty is no longer just to the woman they're caring for. It's also to their boss. And their boss's fiduciary duty is not to the patient at all. Their boss's fiduciary duty, the chief financial officer of a hospital's obligation, and their ethical obligation is not to the people that are coming in as patients in the hospital. It's to keep the hospital viable.
Yep.
And so policies are put in place that make the hospital more money because that's their job. So in other words, they're honoring their ethical obligation, but they're denying the physicians the ability to honor ours. Yeah. And that's how we get to a point where this system has to go. And the only way it's going to go is if people stop using it because they're never going to go away. Yes, they will self-destruct in time, but how much damage will be done until that happens? And so the families that I am reaching who can, and again, unfortunately, we're trapped sometimes. Economically, people are trapped with Medicaid or with their insurance card, and they don't plan for this to go outside of it. And certainly, obviously, if you break your elbow or you have appendicitis, you need to have that insurance or that coverage to cover that. But for pregnancy, we need to think about it maybe a little bit differently as a special life event and not so much as a medical event. And if you start to think of it like that, then you might start planning and saving and looking for a way out. And this is for the majority of women who are pregnant. Again, I'll put that caveat in that you and I always have to throw in that what we're saying, you know, the medical model is needed for some women. And here's the issue. I would like to see the hospital completely removed from the care of pregnant women, but that's not practical or possible because we need them.
Yep.
The problem is that 80% of women or more don't need them. And if we took those 80% out, then the hospital isn't going to be financially viable and their departments are going to go under and they're going to, like I said earlier, they're going to start closing their maternity wards. So it's messy. It's muddy, as you like to say, where it's not just, there's no simple answer, but each individual family needs to look out for themselves. And the best way to do that is to be sure you're well informed about what's going on in your hospital.
Yeah.
And it's hard because their PR departments are out there telling you how they want you to thrive and do really well. And we love you. Yeah. And it's great. And just come to our hospital and we have new curtains and nice hardwood floors. And it's going to be really great here.
Yeah.
All right.
I think, you know what, you nailed it. As we go kind of, we'll finish with the baseball analogy as we round third base. So I'm sure right now, and if there's any Minnesota Twins fans out there, and maybe I know on a podcast you can't comment, but if you catch this on YouTube, go ahead and comment on there. I have the image of Kirby Puckett when he hit that game winning home run and he's pumping his fist. And he's rounded second, and he's rounded third, and he's going to go, touch plate, and he's going to score that home run. Well, this podcast exists to do that for, buzzword right here, bud, individual families. We will do all we can. I know this. I know what God called me to do, and I'm going to give you a last word, but I'll set it up with this frame here, buddy. I remember early on in my chiropractic journey, while I'm still figuring out all this, just like you said with you're in residency, you're in school, you're very naive and to a lot of things. You're naive to the good things and maybe not aware of all that you could do on the good, and you're definitely naive to the bad, right? And the limiting things. And I think that goes for all professions. But I remember I would hear chiropractors again and again, Dr. Stu, go, "We're going to save the world," And I used to think, well, that probably is why people think we're crazy and only 10%. Because chiropractic has this weird conundrum. It's getting way better today. We got a long ways to go. But like only about 8, 10, 15% of the population goes to a chiropractor. But then if you survey those that do, literally the satisfaction rates are 96 to 98%. This longitudinal life, we literally just transform lives, and the satisfaction rates are just, you don't see this anywhere in healthcare. You compare our satisfaction rates. So Gallup has done these studies, right? I think a medical doctor, is 38%. A pediatrician is like 43%. So you have this insane conundrum. Like if people love us that much, how come only 1 out of 10 people even know, what we do? And so I'll get back on track to my story. I remember thinking, well, maybe that's part of it. We might be a little much, which is funny because I'm definitely Tony too much these days. And so I remember thinking, like, son of a gun, you nutjobs. How about we just dial it in a little bit and try and win a few strategic battles to help more people with this amazing, amazing thing called chiropractic. And then medicine saved my son's life, Oliver, 6 weeks early, rapid fast birth, brainstem injury, hypoxic damage, PPHN, ECMO, incredible. I have the most unique path that I think I actually pray that not too many people walk my path in life, because 6 weeks in the NICU is pure HE double hockey sticks. And so I watched medicine save my son's life right at about the time that I was probably about to go rage against the machine with everything you possibly could and even lose the understanding, the caveats that are in central caveats that you and I talked about all throughout this today. And I saw them save Oliver, and then I saw his MRI, and I saw his EEG, and I saw his nervous system absolutely, a mess. And I saw that he was heading towards autism, epilepsy, and cerebral palsy. And I saw a chiropractic's opportunity to get in there and save his life. He's our world. Your kids are your world. Your kids are absolutely everything. So if I come in here and I go nuts, a little extra, even for me, who wakes up a lot extra, and you hear stuff like expect miracles, save the world, we're not talking about tomorrow we're going to fix the whole damn broken system. We're talking about saving your baby. We're talking about saving your pregnancy. We're talking about listening to you, getting you to informed education, empowerment, and consent, getting you to choose. And here's what got me running on that. I still love that. I can't remember exactly what food documentary, but it was Joel Salatine, right? One of the famous ones in that world. And he said, you choose with your dollars. You know, when you choose to buy local food, when you choose to buy organic, you're adding growth to the good system, which is the same as, you know, taking a nice little chip away to the big system. Well, healthcare is actually no different. When you choose a midwife, when you choose home birth, when you choose a prenatal chiropractor and a pediatric chiropractor, sadly today, you will financially not be supported by Medicaid or your third party insurance. But there's actually a secret code to that. Right now, you don't want them to, because then they'll get in the way. Then they have influence over your provider and over that provider's relationship with you. Once there is a third party payer and dictator in the conversation, that doctor no longer works for you. They work for them. I know I had 7 years as an insurance dependent practice and now a decade as a patient centered practice, which is code word for, yeah, it is direct pay. And I know now that parents want that because they want to be able to build a relationship with me and our doctor team, not them and the frickin' administrators and the CPAs and the CFOs and the financial counters. And so what I love is this is all outcome based. And parents, you're in charge of your child's health. It's your child, your voice, your choice. And it starts with choosing your provider. If you find a joyful, happy, empowering doctor who actually, yes, knows their stuff, but more importantly, wants to slow down and listen to you, like Dr. Stu, to find those real answers and those real plans, that's what we wanted to do this podcast episode. We're not going to change the world overnight, but we could change your world by changing who you choose and who you trust for your pregnancy, for your labor and delivery, and for your child's health later on.
That was a great closing. You could probably just end it right there, Tony. That was great. I mean, I have stuff to say, but I don't know. That was such a great ending.
Well, let's do this. We're doing a part two. There ain't no chance on it. We're doing a part 12, buddy. We have so much more to talk about. I didn't even get to jam in with you about Breach and Twins, so I want to bring you back and pick your brain about that and so many other things. You know, really be able to help parents decipher between hospital birth. Well, we covered that end of it, but what are the benefits of home birth? So promise you're coming back on a part two, okay? We're going to run it back. We're going to win a second. We got the 1987 championship team. We're going to come back and do the 1991 team. So okay. Let's do this. Can you please tell us, so you are on tour digitally with the podcast, your Instagram page is fantastic, and you're showing up live to a lot of different places. So where do they go to, we'll put it in the show notes, but where do they go to find and connect with you more? Can you talk about the podcast and other things that you're excited about right now to support and empower moms?
Yeah. First of all, before I do that, I just wanted to just end with say one thing. And that's, you know, you and I are talking and people are going to say, well, who are these two guys? All right. Why should we believe them? And the answer is you shouldn't, right? But you shouldn't necessarily believe corporate medicine either. Yeah. They don't necessarily have your best interests at heart. They're full of propaganda, and the media just whoever pays them the most will put things out there. It's very hard to know where to search these days because search engines are skewed and censored. So looking at the independent podcaster, the independent journalist on Substack, these are the Peter McCulloughs of the world, yeah. These sort of things. Now, look at, I mean, you and I we're not doing this. We don't, this is one of my tenets basically is what they're offering you going to make them money or not? And we're not making any money off of telling you not to do stuff. You don't get paid to not do stuff unless you're in the government. Then you get paid a lot of money to not do stuff. But that's why if you're listening to this podcast, you want to share this podcast with people, then they say, well, who are these two guys? You know, he's mansplaining. He's a guy. He doesn't know anything about obstetrics. Well, you know what? I do. I know a lot and I experienced a lot. I didn't know a lot when I came out. You know, I was the guy in the hazmat suit, you know, with you up in stirrups, washing your bottom off with iodine, covering you with sterile drapes as if birth should be this procedure on your back in sterile drapes, and baby would come out, and I'd cut the cord immediately, and I'd show you this beautiful thing that you just created, and I walk it across the room and set it down in the warmer. That's what we did. It was insane. So I'm from a unique experience of spending 28 years in the hospital setting and then 12 or 13 in the home setting. There aren't a lot of people. So what I have to say may piss off some people, but I would, you know, argue that you know, to discuss the facts and look at it that way. I'd just like to say that.
Yeah. Love because, you, dude.
Yeah. It's important because, you know, there are one of the things that you should be really careful and wary about when you look at a news article or a paper is when they say things like experts say, or, you know, the consensus is, you know, that doesn't mean anything. And they, you know, and there's always somebody who's going to say something, because I think there are true believers that the medicalized model is the best thing since sliced bread, because they don't look deeply at their outcomes. So they see a tragedy and they say, we could have prevented that, and so therefore, you know, everything else is bad. But they don't see the damage. If you've ever watched the movie Team America: World Police, I would say it's a good example. Have you seen that, Tony?
No.
Okay. It's put out by the South Park guys.
Oh, goodness.
And it's with marionettes. And there's a scene where the Team America goes in to beat the terrorists in Paris at the beginning of the movie. The terrorists are going to blow up Paris. And Team America comes in with their jets and their guns and everything else, and they kill all the terrorists. And then they look behind them, and Paris is in shambles. So they kill the terrorists, but the end result was that Paris was still blown up. And they did the same thing. They did the same thing at Cairo in Egypt later in the movie. It's pretty funny. That's what maybe we're. I mean, if you look at the outcomes, you look at the results, you look at what's behind the medical model, what they've done in the past, what happened last year or the year before, you can see it looks like Team America's job wasn't so good. They didn't do such a good job. So I'll leave it at that. How to reach me? I have a podcast with my friend Bliss Young. She's a midwife in California, and it's called the Birthing Instincts Podcast. Everything is Birthing Instincts, by the way. It's awesome. The Birthing Instincts Podcast. At Birthing Instincts on Instagram. We have birthinginstinctspodcast.com. We started a Patreon. I've published some papers. I've got papers on home birthing, on home breech birthing, and we've got one in the for peer review right now on home twin birthing. Awesome. And those are available for free on the homepage of my website. I wrote a book, but I don't even promote it anymore because it's over 10 years old and it's sort of obsolete in some of the categories, but it's called Fearless Pregnancy because science has changed in the last 10, 15 years. I advocate. I go around the country, and on my website is a schedule of events. Awesome. Where I go around the world, actually, and I teach seminars, two-day seminars on breech and twin skills, things that should be taught by residency directors that are not being taught anymore, and doctors don't know how to do it. They fear breech, they fear twins, they section them all. It's again, if we're talking about how we get started in life, this is not the right way to be started for most of these pregnancies. And yet that's the only choice you'll get, and you'll be gaslit to be told that anything else is dangerous. And in words like safety, it's, you know, safe and effective have no longer have any meaning whatsoever in our society. Right. So I'll leave it at that.
Thanks, Tony. Thank you. This was a blast. I can't wait to do it again. I can't wait to continue to just see this advocacy, this empowerment, and this change happening. We know what we're up against, and we wake up every single day ready to move forward, find you, empower you, get you connected to the providers. That's what this podcast exists for. It is number one, first and foremost. It is empowerment for parents. It is going to give you that hope back. It is going to give you the real answers. We even got Dr. Stu some nerdy neurological answers here today, right? About why are we so sensitive to gluten, and why are we so sensitive to these toxic foods in today's world? So it's hope, it's answers, and real root cause explanations. And all of that is designed with this in mind, to get you into action. And the first action that many families need to take to change the outcomes for the health of your family is you need a new doctor to trust. You need to find that nervous system focused pediatric, prenatal, and family chiropractor. And instead of, you know, leaving them as a never chosen yet, or a second or third or last choice, what will change your family's life is if you move them up into that first place, first trust, because we will build that lifetime relationship with you. We will truly listen to you. We will get you informed, actually informed about where health comes from, the nervous system, the microbiome, these things. And we can then make adjustments to get that nervous system back online and make the connections. The other thing you want to know about your local PX doctor and nervous system focused chiropractor, we have found the Dr. Stews. We have found the Blisses. We have found the other providers who are going in the same direction as us for your family. So once you find one of us, you open up this whole new world of real health, real truth, and just real, amazing, joyful, incredible outcomes. So if you haven't been to pxdocs.com yet, and you haven't reviewed this podcast and shared this podcast, start there. Go to the website, check it out. Tons of articles, tons of videos on our YouTube page, Instagram. And then if you need that new doctor to lead your family out of the system and out of the storm, you go to pxdocs.com, you click on the link to find your nervous system focused chiropractor, and everything starts there. Dr. Stu, we love you. We respect you. We're cheering you on, and we'll see you back on for part two sometime soon. God bless, buddy.